Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined by Hakeem Anwar, who is the creator of Above Phone. And Hakeem and I engaged a rollicking conversation about the entire tech surveillance realm, how it is amping up by way of the big, beautiful bill, and Peter Thiel's Palantir shenanigans. It is heavy on solutions, and we do delve into some fun spiritual and conspiracy realms. So do stick around. Before we dive into today's show, I am reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to tell your friends, to leave glowing reviews on all of the podcast apps. And as long as you're in the mood to offer some positive reviews, which in my experience is a great way to like root in to the abundance stream by giving not just cash or heavy metals or gifts or whatnot, but to give our support by way of blurbs and testimonials and reviews and high vibe words. As you have read any of my books and found any value, thank you for navigating on over to Amazon and leaving me gushing reviews. These types of things go a long way in helping us spread the good word. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. I am back to regular newsletters, not too much. I promise not to overwhelm. Just value-rich reminders of new podcast drops, new courses, special discounts, webinars, live events, etc., etc. I promise I never share your information with any of the grody data collecting agencies that we talk about in today's podcast. Last piece is that we are talking about the Above Phone, which seems to be a phenomenal solution to a lot of the big tech surveillance data sharing shenanigans happening out there in sham show land. And Hakeem has been nice enough to offer you, my community, a special Above Phone discount. So by using the, I guess it's not a special code, but when you type in abovephone.com/Danny, that will automatically get you set up with a $25 off coupon on any of the Above Phone products, which I cannot recommend highly enough. All right, that does it for housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy my conversation with Hakeem Anwar. Before we jump in, I want to give you guys a quick heads up that we did incur a little bit of tech spazziness during our conversation. So if you hear the sound disappear, worry not, it'll be right back. If it sounds a little glitchy, thank you for your patience and your understanding. Here we go. Hakeem Anwar, how are you? Nice to see you.
Hey, blessings. It's great to be here, Danny. And thanks to everyone watching.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here. Your tech has been on my radar for a while. You are, of course, the CEO of Above Phone. So before we get into the whole state of the surveillance state, I'd love to know kind of the origin story of Above Phone and what inspired you to create this for us.
Yeah, totally. So I've been more awake for some time in my career as a software engineer. And so I built different things like web and mobile apps, and then progressively got more and more in hands-on to other tech. And I was just, something was feeling off. It wasn't very fulfilling, like the things that these apps were doing. And I didn't like how companies were handling people's data behind the scenes. And that kind of all hit ahead. I think a lot of people's lives transformed after 2020, and mine did too. I was in New York City, and basically they were asking, hey, build a digital prison for yourself. Go ahead, build it for us. And I was like, I think I'll pass. And so at the time, I knew this guy named Derek Burrows, and he was leading this thing called the Freedom Cell Network, which is a decentralized social movement. And the concept was simple. They had a website. You could put your location in, and then you can find like-minded people near you. And he was like, can you help take care of this? And I said, okay, I'll take care of it. And then I made the new version of it. And that same year, we had so many people join. We had 20,000 people join that year. So I kind of found myself being like the tech guy for all these people. And these people were making, like, you know, the community was really great because we were making all this progress and growing our own food and taking care of our health and talking about these things. But many people were talking about them using devices owned by big technology. And we know how close they are with the government. And so I decided to, the data everyone was communicating was really important, and to make my focus making sure that people knew private ways to communicate and to do their work, because this work is really, really important.
I love that. I had no idea that you started off with Derek Bros. I saw him speak the first time in 2017, mm-hmm. When he was doing the kind of decentralized Bitcoin tour.
His first tour.
Yeah, exactly. And it was in Venice Beach, and there were like a few of us like sitting on the ground. And that's when I, you know, joined my first Freedom Cell. And then 2019, I moved to Santa Fe, and I noticed, I was like, wow, this whole network has exploded in such a different way. There were still only two of us here in Santa Fe, but I'm grateful for all that you guys have created.
Well, thank you. And we're super grateful to have Freedom Cells on the ground like you guys. And I mean, like, from that, so many beautiful things were created, like the People's Reset, which is coming up in January, right? And so a lot of people congregate together for that reason, to watch, to be focused on solutions. And so, yeah, I'm really excited for that. It really changed my perspective of like, what is the internet good for? And it's really to bring people together, not to isolate people. So I do education that is aligned with that at takebackourtech.org. And then, of course, we have our privacy company above.
Yeah. So I want to get into some of the ways that you're keeping yourself sovereign on the internet and recommending that others do too. But let's start off with Above Phone, how you created it, how it's different from, say, like an iPhone or an Android or whatnot.
Yeah, so this is a metaphor I've been using lately. I mean, so you speak a lot about the language of healing, and I've been working on my own inner dialogue. And then part of that, like, I wanted to expand the idea to the data. And it was this dialogue that's happening all the time. But I think the phone has a way of kind of getting you unconscious. And so when something asks for your information, you're like, I guess I got to do it. Bloop, bloop, bloop. And so this phone is doing the opposite of what big tech phones are doing, where these big tech phones will say to your face, hey, we're secure and we're private. But on the other hand, they are able to snoop into your things while you're not there. So they're not being upfront about it. And so you're getting at what is essentially a pre-hacked phone. It comes to you, it's already hacked. Mm-hmm. And so these companies can install apps on it if they'd like, and they have done that during the pandemic with the contact tracing software. And then also they're logging so much real-time data. The things that you would expect, like your phone calls and text messages, but also things that you wouldn't. They're very like cunning in this way. They'll get all the devices on your local home network. And so people often wonder, well, hey, I saw this ad on my computer, but I was talking about this in the car. Well, right. It's all these unique identifiers that get tied together. So that's how big tech phones work. There's a huge ecosystem behind the scenes. So Above Phone is using open source software. So that's software that's transparent, that you can go and look and see. And we're very committed to this. It's every piece that we could make open source in the solution, we did. And so there's different tools for everything, where normally you might use iMessage or FaceTime to communicate. Now you use video conferencing tools like Jitsi. And then the phone is running an operating system that is completely transparent. And so the important part for me was that it made zero connections to big tech, and it becomes more of a personal choice. Once you have all the information you need, you can install Google if you want, but it's off by default.
And so if I chose to install Google on Above Phone, is now it tracking me the same way Google's tracking everything?
It is. It's making connections to Google, and it really depends on the app you are using and what settings you enable on your phone. There's a lot of things we don't think about, like location on our phone. So normally you would think that, oh yeah, it's GPS satellites. Well, no, because Google and Apple also locate you through Wi-Fi positioning, which is they look at all the nearby Wi-Fi networks and they know the locations of those and other devices. And so they can pinpoint you to within 10 or 20 feet, right? So those, then you can start to make choices like that. Okay, I want to use the satellites, which is a way more private way to locate yourself because it's a passive thing. You're listening to signals coming from the satellites instead of sending your local Wi-Fi networks off. So there's choices like that you have to make. And then there's also the apps you use, whether they're using Google services or not. There's things like notifications, locations, a lot of rhyming words, and then also advertising. So that's one thing you're going to find, that on this phone there is no advertising service, so you don't get any ads, which is wonderful.
Okay, I noticed, because I definitely have Luddite tendencies, so I've been resistant to the whole cell phone, you know, linking everything together, like that whole paradigm I'm pretty averse to. And I've noticed I just bought a new printer and I wasn't figuring out how to hook it up. And when I called and finally got customer service on the phone, they're like, oh, well, you need to install this app. And I was like, I don't want to install an app. So I'm noticing this push towards getting everyone on the app titty. Talk to me about installing apps and what kind of access that's giving to big tech.
Yeah, for sure. So when I used to build mobile apps, the last thing you do is you publish the app on Google App Store or the Apple App Store. And the first thing that would happen when you do that, people would start coming to you and they would start getting you to include their software, which would be things like, oh, analytics, you'll have a better idea of what your users are doing. And then Google, of course, is like, hey, put our ads in your app. You'll make a few cents every time someone looks at this page. And so developers are incentivized, or a lot of these people release their apps for free and they want to make some sort of money. So they'll include not just one, but really multiple different analytics or advertising or tracking services. And what I'll show you today is you can actually look at which ones an app is using. So normally these are hidden, but there are ways to show which libraries the app is using. And these apps can track anything from what you're putting in on the screen, what pages you're visiting, and also the permissions you give the app. So if you give your app, let's say it's a PDF reader, it needs access to your files, but the PDF reader has a whole bunch of trackers on it. Now they get access to all those same permissions. So it's really opening up a larger door than you think.
And so, like, what apps do you use, if any? Do you dip your toes into that realm? Are you like hardcore, like no apps, just keep my above phone bare? How do you do it?
Yeah, so I find the apps are in alignment with my values. And so the first thing for me is transparency. And luckily, there's a whole world of apps out there where these developers are building apps for the sake of creation. And they're releasing the software, which is free and open source, which means you get it for free. You have the choice to donate, but it's free, it's transparent. And a lot of these apps are doing the exact same things that you would get from a normal app store. So for instance, if I bring up the phone here and you look at the apps here, you've got different things for media, navigation, office, messaging, and security, and also other things to download apps. And so all of these apps are open source and auditable. And what these open app stores like to do, which I'll bring up one here, is they like to make it a little bit more obvious what is happening. This is an app called F-Droid. And so let me just pick a good example here. I'll use a PDF reader because this is a good example. So Librera Reader, this is for reading documents, right? So it should be pretty simple. And this is all these features, but here you can look at the permissions. So it can ask for the delete, modify or delete the contents of your shared storage, or just read the storage, which makes sense. It's a PDF reader. It needs to be able to read. Read your files. Now, the cool thing about the phone over all these permissions, so you can even do Now let's go to Aurora Store, Google Play Store privately. I'll just get Aurora Store is that you can actually see it, it does a better job than the Google Play Store at giving people informed consent. So here we're looking at the equivalent Adobe Acrobat, right? We're reading PDFs. Again, it shouldn't need much, but you see that it says, hey, it's going to connect to Google Play services here. Then you go down and it takes 30 different permissions. And then you look at the privacy, and then you have all these other companies also involved in the reading of your PDF. It's like, come on, man, I just wanted to read a book, and now it's turned into this whole thing. So there are really nice versions, there's nice alternatives that aren't just alternatives, they're actually better than the apps you're normally using.
And so is this something that Above Phone is filtering for us? Like, how do tech retards like myself figure this stuff out?
Danny, come on, conscious language. We don't say that. We are in the process of not becoming a retard.
Thank you. Those of us who are still learning to love tech, how do we do it?
Beautiful. So it's a process, and you know, at first it seems like there's a lot of new jargon and stuff, but that's kind of why Above exists, because there's this ecosystem, and what we did is, hey, we went ahead and found you the best stuff. Here you go. So there's apps that you can use for video conferencing. There's apps for the PDF reader, like I suggested, and every app on the Above Phone is open source and it works well. And our thousands of customers let us know if it's working well or not. So there's this constant like ebb and flow of the software that's on the phone. But the good news is that you have a lot more support. You have someone you can talk to at any time. And you know, at the end of the day, it's not that hard to use. If you have a phone and you used Android before, it's very similar. So I'll just do a quick demo, right? You swipe down from the top to see your notifications. So I can see some messages in there. And then you swipe down up from the bottom to see your list of apps, right? And then you can drag stuff around, you can switch screens. There's a settings here, so you can go into settings. Okay, I need to work on my Wi-Fi. Search Wi-Fi. There's my Wi-Fi, and then I can connect to Wi-Fi, right? So it's just a process of learning it, but we have all the guidance you need, and every one of our phones comes with a free 45-minute call with a live person, so we can actually teach you live on the call.
Actual human customer support?
Actual human customer support.
that right there is worth the price of admission plus everything else. What are the downsides? What are we not going to be able to do on Above Phone that we think we really need?
Yeah, a lot of it is sometimes the baggage you carry from being an Apple refugee or exile. So things like FaceTime and iMessage, which a lot of people use for communication. One, they should know when they use those things that their phone calls, when they get their phone calls, those actually go to Apple first before they even get to that person. And so that's calling, that's the iMessage, you're being able to send videos through text message. That's actually not how you text message. That's something that Apple created, and now people think that is a normal feature of a text message when it's not. And so my team has gone back and, you know, we've put together a solution for people to have video conferencing. So the one thing we have is Jitsi video conferencing. It's a lot like Zoom. If you've ever used Zoom before, you just kind of, oh, look at that. That's a nice room name. Let's join that. United Tides Reach Gather. And so then you hop into a meeting like this, and there's a URL that it gives you. So I log in, and then there's a button to copy the URL, and you can send that to anyone. And then they can join the call on a web browser, on a laptop, on a phone, it doesn't matter. So that's one thing, the iMessage and the FaceTime. The other thing is now that we're seeing that Google is trying to make it harder for alternative operating systems, and banking apps and financial apps are the first ones to be like, okay, you need to have a verified Android operating system. Even though this phone running Graphene OS is far more secure on its technical merits. So some of these banking apps just refuse to work, or you have to use an older version. So there's workarounds for everything. And the thing that you would do is you could use your banking in the browser, or you could do it on your laptop, which a lot of our customers do. There are also banking apps that didn't go along with it. And so there's this empowerment of being like, huh, my bank wants to make it harder for people who value privacy. I'm going to switch banks. Now, that might not be feasible for most people, but it's still part of the dynamic.
Yeah. Awesome. Fantastic. So I'd love your take on like the larger surveillance sphere. It seems like the giant octopus of surveillance has wormed its way in to the executive branch by way of Peter Thiel and all of his tentacles. So can you kind of explain this next phase of the surveillance state, the giant matrix control grid to us?
Yeah, and there's a lot to unpack. So I'll start with the big, beautiful bill. What an alliteration. Good job. Right? No, it's, and then hidden in this large bill on page 278, there's something that says that states cannot do anything to impose on federal AI projects. They can't make it any harder. They have to cooperate. They can't impose any additional fines. They have to cooperate under threat of criminal fines or a criminal prosecution, which is, they're using the stick approach for that. And so this is a history of doing things to aggregate our country's data. I mean, I'm an American citizen, and now we're seeing every federal agency bring their data together. So there's also an executive order earlier this year that said no more data silos. The information from the IRS has to be easily accessible by other federal agencies. And of course, that was all leaning into Palantir.
Yep.
Which I'm sure you've heard about Palantir, and it's the talk of the town these days. And it's Palantir is a company founded by Peter Thiel and Alex Karp, and they used to work at another company together, PayPal. I believe it was PayPal. And then they got the idea to do big data for governments and the military. And so their first customer was the CIA. And the way Palantir works is they make products that can connect to many different data sources. So it's like that we all know about internet surveillance thanks to Snowden. The way, this is kind of my conjecture, but I think the way these investigations worked in the past is FBI had their own intelligence database. The DEA had their own intelligence database, like when they collected everyone's call and text records. And so there was kind of this niceties these agencies needed to have with one another in order to cooperate. There needed to be an investigation that they were working together on, or they needed to know the right person to ask for that data. So now that's kind of being thrown out the window, and potentially everything could be combined. So what Palantir does is it connects everything, and it creates digital representations of what these databases are holding. So if it's the database of people, it can create the representations of those people. And let's say now they go into state DMVs and they get that information. Now they have a database of people in cars, so they can begin to map these relationships together. And so that is potentially what they could build. What we know what they have built so far for the military is software that can, you use satellite feeds and you can kind of look overhead, and then you see your weapons on your side of the chessboard, and you see kind of where those are. Then you can observe things that you don't know about. Oh, there's this truck driving down the sandy road. Is it an enemy? And Palantir's product Gotham will give you the probability. I think it's 49% probable that we should blow those guys up. And then all the dude does has to hit per approve. So it's pretty scary when they develop weapons like that. And now that was so popular with the military, the police departments have picked that up. So we know this through BuzzFeed, ironically, of all places, because they submitted a Freedom of Information Act. And out of, I think, what, LAPD has like 16,000 officers, half of them are already using this tool. And so LAPD started to do the same thing. They started to make agreements with other sheriff departments, schools, the DMVs, to collect a collection of data, and even the traffic cameras. And the end result was a police officer could be like, okay, I'm looking for this person, white male, 6 feet, has a skull tattoo. And it would bring up a list of, you know, anyone who's been previously incarcerated, put through the system, been through the prison system. And then they could click on them and be like, okay, who does he talk to? And they'd see a list. Where does he live? What cars does he drive? Where was the car last seen driving? So it's like, boom, like from just in a few years, in a span of 20 years, we went from this old paradigm of surveillance to this new thing I'm calling unified surveillance.
Now, you mentioned when you started off as a software engineer, like moving into 2020, you saw what they were doing with the data and you weren't super hip to it. Was that a shock for you? Like when you went into software engineering, did you know this kind of dark, nefarious surveillance plan that was unfolding at the same time?
I don't think I was looking at it with the same lens. I mean, I've been a conspiracy theorist for a long time, but my focus, focus wasn't internet privacy really until I started working with the Freedom Cell Network. But I did know that, like, you know, like it's ecosystems within ecosystems. So at the company, it's like, okay, we're managing these people's data. And okay, usually developers will have a test database that they're testing the app on. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it would have the information of like real people on there. So you're seeing like the social security number of an 8-year-old and you're like, wait a minute, this is a real person. Maybe we shouldn't be doing this. But it's like, it's okay, it's secure, it's in the company. Like, don't worry about it, right? So it's that type of thing. And I didn't really see the bigger picture until we're working on the Freedom Cell Network. And then I have all these people's kind of like, you know, I'm stewarding these people's personal data. I'm like, whoa, no, this is way too precious. And from that point onwards, I started to focus in on what actually happens. Part of that is because of how much of a dick Google was being, where they stripped us of all the pages, social media was like shadow banning us, and people were attacking the site. So that like got me thinking like, wow, like they really don't want this to get out there.
Was there any conversation like while you were in it around the ethics, around people's privacy, around like our basic civil liberties in this country? Were there any whispers of those things?
I mean, I think the developers all talk about, there's all a lot of internal conversations about how this is weird. How this is weird. And then also there's a thing of like, hey, at least we're not sharing it with third parties, but you don't really know the lengths those are all like executive level decisions that these people make data sharing agreements with. For certain classes of information, like protected by HIPAA, for instance, you would think that there's a lot more walls. But then you also see projects now like Tiberius, which was during the pandemic, which broke HIPAA and got HHS to pull directly from the hospital's protected data. But I mean, to answer your questions, yeah, there's murmurs. And then it's like, okay, you have to kind of think of the long game. It's like, okay, this isn't fulfilling. I definitely don't want to be doing this, but maybe something will come up. And there have been whistleblowers and to different companies who've unfortunately passed away or something's happened to. So yeah, it's dark.
Yeah, it's pretty dark. I was kicked out of my junior high because I refused to take computers, and I just had a bad feeling about it from the get-go. I know that like if we look at the internet, Facebook, we can track Facebook back to InQtel, which we know is CIA. They say that, you know, they created the World Wide Web out of CERN, and like a way for all these different countries and scientists to kind of collude on what was supposedly a large particle accelerator, which was supposedly just to, you know, find this God particle. But do you think that this was all nefarious from the get-go, or do you think something went awry and that this is like totally benign or neutral technology that just seems to be getting in the hands of some bad apples?
Yeah, that's a really deep question. I think that with anything, like it's a new creation, and it really did change the paradigm, because it allowed a network to be created that could be monitored in a decentralized way. And then much later on, the NSA and other bodies like did their best to capture the traffic even tighter. I'm not sure if it was designed for surveillance in mind starting from day one, but I think that that was a property that they knew they could use to their advantage and in an information signals context. Now, I also don't think they foresaw, you know, what the internet would become and a lot of the beautiful things that have come of the internet. And even there is so much going on the internet that how hard it would be to keep track of all of it and how feasible that is. Like, for instance, the darknet markets, which are still doing, they're still doing millions of dollars in terms of their total market size, supposedly doing the exact things that, you know, these governments would crack down, but still be able to generate revenue. So to make a long story short, you know, it's possible that there were surveillance. It was designed. It's almost like the surveillance was inherent with how it's created. It's like there's no detachment from it. Someone has to run, you know, the routers and the bridges for this worldwide network. It's going to start with the academic institutions and the corporations. Yeah, it's inherent to how it was built. It would be much harder to create an internet without it, like a decentralized internet. But now I think that, like, the real beauty I see of it is yes, there is surveillance. You don't have to be a victim of it. The beauty of the internet is that you can learn anything you want. And I think we're starting to see that transformation with more people. So I think we just got to use the better sides of it.
And are there any, I mean, because it seems like you're at the forefront and you, as a software engineer, like you really understand the tech specifics of the landscape. So aside from using your own products, are there any other protective measures that you're taking to protect your privacy, to protect your anonymity on the day to day?
Yeah, there's a lot of things. I think that people should think about disassociating their personal life and then their work life and then the person they are online. I think that's pretty important. And also just be really aware of what they're communicating on and what are the unsaid agreements. So for instance, like phone calls and text messages, none of that is private. That's probably one of the least private ways you can communicate, so much so that not even our government, which, you know, the DEA, like I mentioned earlier, they have a program which collects all of the phone calls and texts, the records of it, not necessarily the content. So they know who is talking to who, and they use it for like the Better Call Saul shtick, where you're a drug dealer and you make a drug deal and you break the phone and then you call that person back on another phone. That doesn't work. They figured that out 10 years ago. So there's aspects like that. And so to just use private ways to communicate, for instance, the Jitsi video calling app that I mentioned, that is end-to-end encrypted if both people are using a web browser. And then also it leaves no trace on the server. So when we when we put together these solutions for people, we try and maximize the amount of privacy and have nothing sitting on our servers that someone can go and ask us for. With some things that is easy, like video conferencing. And then we're starting to see this trend with more software companies as well. And we're starting to see the trend too with apps like that are acting as this decentralized messenger. So there's a lot of really cool things you can do. I think that as we move forward, we're going to start to see like local responsibility for different utilities. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a spiritual aspect which you're paving the way on. And then there also might be like your local services hub, where this is where you get your email. And it's going to really take like breaking down the centralization of power so that so spread out, it would be really hard to go after every single person. And if they did, they'd be like, what are you doing? You're talking about your feelings and trading eggs? Guys, like, this was a bust. Let's go after somewhere else.
It sounds like domestic terrorism to me.
Could be. I'll throw an egg or two.
Have any government agencies approached you and asked you for information about above phone users?
No, not yet. God forbid. But, you know, we'll deal with that when we get there. And until now, we're just keeping our services as private as possible. The logs we keep, which most of our services don't have any logs at all. For things like email, we keep logs for 2 days. So there's this period of 2 days or something, you know, where there would be able to provide any information. But for me, that's a bridge I'll cross when we get there. Mm-hmm. For other people who have like really secure requirements, you're gonna need to find messengers that don't leave a trace, which is hard. But there's different ones like Simplex, and a few others. Now these are all apps that you would benefit from being used on a private phone, and I think that these privacy phones, like the most private way you could use them, perhaps would be connected to Ethernet. You can actually see when I bring my phone up, it's got the little airplane on it. So it is connected to Ethernet. It's not using Wi-Fi. It's not using the cellular network. And
does that mean it's plugged in?
It's plugged in right now. Yes.
Okay.
It's plugged in. And so there's the whole EMF. It's not generating any EMF. And then there's layers, right? So it's like, if you want to communicate privately, the first thing you need to do is get private devices. What my focus is to focus on like the 80% of mass surveillance, which just comes from you consenting. All right, I'll take the Windows or Mac laptop. Okay, I'll take the Google phone. And then to strip them out of the equation, you're starting off in a place where you can actually have private communications, because you could have encrypted messaging, but if they're reading the keyboard, it's not really worth it. So we're taking it baby steps here.
And if I'm messaging someone with an iPhone from my above phone, does that make me vulnerable to iPhone surveillance? Are they tracking that the person who they're tracking is talking to me? Does that put me on their radar?
It depends how you're speaking to them. Now, if it's like a text message, then, you know, they have access to that person's contacts and they can read the text messages from that person's phone. So it's possible for them to get that. But if you're using something like a video conferencing tool, then there's less of a chance. And I'll just say, these are all probabilities, right? Because mm-hmm. there's so many different layers of surveillance that could happen. Only Apple knows the real answer. But you're minimizing your attack surface is what they call it in information security. So it's about trying to make the right choices with the right person. It seems like a lot, but the real recommendations are pretty standard no matter who you're talking to. For the safest level of communications, we currently recommend this XMPP, which is a 20-year-old messaging protocol. And you can see here, I've got phone numbers in here. I've also got a group of hiking buddies. And so this is a free and open protocol. It allows for end-to-end encryption, and anyone can run their own server, which is why I love this more than anything else, because you can actually carve off and create your own network. And so you can sign up for this, you get something that looks like an email, and then you can start making encrypted messages, calls, you can send files to each other. So this is a decentralized way to do that, which is really, really good. You'll also notice I've got all these phone numbers here. So what we were able to do is we worked with this other company called JMP, and they run an internet phone number service on top of the XMPP messenger. So you get to pick your own US or Canada phone number. It's really cool. You can like, you know, go through the list of numbers and find an angel number. It's really lucky when you get one of those. And from there, you can communicate with other phones, even Apple phones, and it just looks like to them you're calling from a regular number. But what you've done is you've disassociated your cell service with your phone number usage. So if there is a record of the call or text somewhere, it's not going to be like, all right, Danny was here next to this radio tower. It'll just be like, okay, there's an internet number user that we don't know about.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool. What about with everything you know, like how are you operating in the world? Are you paying cash for everything? Are you evading like a lot of the electronic AI stuff that they're trying to foist upon us?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's actually hard to pay cash everywhere now. I pay cash for the transactions that matter. Mm-hmm. If I'm getting a coffee, you know, and again, it's a lot easier because I've separated my identities, right? There's an identity for business, there's an identity for my personal life. And so in my personal life, no, I use credit cards. I think that we're kind of in this bridge scenario where mm-hmm. we still have to rely on banks for the most part. It's mm-hmm. kind of hard to be fully 100% cryptocurrency. And then even the people who say they're fully 100% cryptocurrency, I really doubt they are, because a lot of services they use intermediary banks. So now there's levels to this, right? So I would say using a credit card is more private than using Venmo or like a payment app.
Yep.
The banks have different reporting requirements, at least right now, than these apps do.
Okay.
So I try and make the best choices as I can with the situation. I think it's okay for the most part to use a credit card. Just be careful when associating your personal information. Like for instance, those terminals that are like, oh, put points and put in your phone number. Well, there you go. Now you have your credit card associated with your payment profile on the internet. And there's a lot of payment processors that are, you know, trying to associate information like that.
Okay. Do you use any social media?
I use Telegram and I use Substack, and most of those are, it's kind of like a work thing or just getting my content out there for Take Back Our Tech. I don't use any social media. Yeah, those profiles have long been dead for a long time.
Smart. I'm envious. If I believed in envy, I would be envious. I just see the urge.
On the opposite side, I'm envious of like the local connections you can make. People are telling me what they get off of, you know, Facebook Marketplace or whatever. And they're like, oh, look, there's all these communication happening. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not privy to it. And, it's disconcerting, right? Because Facebook is kind of like an important part of like local communities and local groups. I know there's a lot of energy there. I think that everyone should make the choice of, hey, what is this contributing to my life? Is it important? Am I doing good in this world? And judge for themselves. I'm not a purist. I don't want to tell people this is what you can use and what you can't use. And if you don't use this, you don't believe in it. No, it's like you each have, you know, we each have our role in all of this. And the best thing to do is just find set the appropriate boundaries. So like for Facebook, it's much better that it's not on your phone and it's on your computer. Because when it's on your phone, it's got access to all these permissions. It has an idea of the other apps on the phone. Other apps could be using Facebook's advertising. So there's all those things.
I'm one of those weirdos who reads the user agreements.
Oh, really?
Yes, I do. Which definitely affects how I use things. I don't have any social media on my phone. I no longer post any illustrations on Instagram because I know they think they own them. I don't use my Remarkable anymore because their user agreement is horrible. But do you see it? Like, it seems like the humans are powerless. You know, these user agreements, like you waive your right to sue and you waive your right to be part of class action suit. Like with what you know of tech, do you see a version of reality wherein the people get to band together and hold these companies responsible for so many civil rights abuses?
I envision that. Whether it's going to happen is another question. And I think the biggest defeat for them would just be to pull away. I don't have any like malice against them in the sense that I don't know what it's going to accomplish by putting all these people in jail. I think personally from like my time and energy, I want to try and build something outside of their reaches. And so, you know, it would be nice to get some justice. but they like what they're doing is not lawful, but it's legal, right? Because there's this contract and everything. Right. And so like, so, okay, I'd say this, it's like for every tool you're using, is there an open source version? And I would answer like all, there are very few software services that I use that have a end user agreement. And it's fine because I've been doing this for like, we run so much software in order to have this, like we don't use with our company, there's no third parties involved. We manage our data center. We run every single piece of software we use to run the business, except for the payment processor, because there's really no alternative. And I don't expect everyone to be at that level, but to get in the habit of searching for open source tools. And that could just be as easy as, hey, I use this note-taking app. What are some open source alternatives? The concept now in the technology space is local first, where the data lives on your computer. That's how programs used to run, but now it's like trendy. A lot of developers are like excited about this. So those are some things people can do. Maybe they're tools that they use every day. Look for the open source local first alternatives.
Mm-hmm. And is that, so if I were, you know, I'm open my brand new Above phone, does it have its own kind of version of the app store with all open source options available?
Yes, I'm glad you asked. There is something called F-Droid. And so this is an app catalog, which has every app on here is free and open source. So that not only means it's transparent, but it also means that if you don't like something they're doing, another developer could come in and copy it and make their own version. It's like, oh, okay, they started doing some tracking and stuff. Here, we made our own. Version, which is better. And it has sparkles. So they're kind of the differences. One, if I wanted to, that I like, it's this one. Could download the audio of it, and I can also stream it. So this does it without signing in. There's no account you need, and you can also subscribe and get notifications, because like podcasting fundamentally is something called an RSS feed, which is a decentralized protocol to get updates. But all these podcasting services, they sign you up, they play ads to you, all that kind of stuff. So you can cut them out with this. And so AntennaPod is a really good one. NewPipe is also another good one for this is a way to watch YouTube.
Okay.
And so this is a way to watch YouTube as privately as you possibly could. Now, one, it's not using the YouTube app, which would normally track, okay, how long are you watching the video? What video are you watching next? What are you scrolling to? And there's, you know, there's so many things that they could track inside that application. This one instead, are you on YouTube?
I have a channel, but I don't post my shows there anymore because I'm like a quarter strike away from obliteration.
You're towing the line. Okay, well.
Yeah, I just post little teasers there.
Oh, this is cool. So what's cool about the NewPipe is, so you can, you know, you'll have features that you normally wouldn't have with the YouTube app. So for instance, I can play it in the background. And I can lock my phone. This is something that you normally need to pay $9 a month for. Ridiculous, ridiculous. But here you can do it for free because free and open source. And then also you can do the same thing. You can download the video here. You can download the video. You can download the audio. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So right. So these apps aren't just alternatives. They can be better in a lot of ways. And then you can start to hoard all of your favorite content. Let's see, I'll show you another one. So this is OpenStreetMaps. Let's go to my places. Let's go to Nashville.
So this is an open source map app?
This is an open source map app. That's right. Okay. So what's really cool is you can download the maps of the entire country. Let's see here. That. you can download the maps of the entire country, and you can see how Nashville is highlighted green.
Yep.
So that's because I've downloaded that map. And so I could download a map of the entire United States. And once I've done that, I can navigate anywhere in the US completely offline. So I could have my phone on airplane mode, actually. And so you'll be making zero connections. And it does the local routing and everything. So what I've done here and what I do is when I navigate around, I kind of save the points to my map. So here's a point for wild berry foraging. So if I wanted to navigate to that, I could just do it in one click. And this is a part of the same concept of like taking your knowledge of the world and saving it. And so we already have the technology to be making these decentralized maps. Like think about a local freedom cell crowd pooling their knowledge together, finding all the organic restaurants, the farmers market, and sharing these maps with each other. So they're completely out of the view of Google Maps and other things, and they can navigate completely offline.
Just that alone has me super excited. For whatever reason, like, I'm not even allowed to download Google Maps. I lost that privilege. And the iPhone map works like 40% of the time. But I don't like the idea of being tracked. This sounds way more appealing. Plus the offline, it's like you have your own Thomas guide with you at all times.
Exactly. Yeah. And it does have a creepy robot voice. It's not that creepy. It's just monotone.
And what about music? Do we have access to music on the above phone?
You do, actually. There's a few apps that will just stream music from YouTube Music. So I don't have it installed on this phone, but there's one called InnerTune. There's another one that I'm blanking on the name of right now. And so the new Pipe app I showed earlier and this music app I'm talking about now, they do connect to Google's video servers, but that's the only connection they make versus like being in the application. So with that, you can download music directly to your phone. It's really, really cool. And then for people who are more in, they're more in the popular app space, they can download Spotify. They can download other music streaming apps as well. Sorry, go ahead.
If I download Spotify on my above phone, is it tracking me? Is it collecting my music listening data?
Yes, because that's a contract. That's the interaction between you and Spotify. What the phone is helping to do is to break the association between all your Spotify data and then your identity on Google and Apple. Because now Apple and Google don't have eyes on that same thing, if there's anyone to be wary of, it's them too, because they have the biggest databases out of any other tech company.
Right, right. Got it. So even if we are using non-open source apps, there's still an upside because it's not sharing all of our data with like the boogeymen that are Apple and Google.
Exactly. Yes. And so you'll be able to download Spotify. You can go down here. You'll notice this app should work just normally, but then they have these four trackers. So they've got analytics, Crashlytics, Branch. They've got some stuff from Google, which was going to be about the analytics of how you use the app, but it's not tied to your Google account. It's not tied to anything else you do on the phone.
Got it. Do you use Gmail? That does it for the first half of my conversation with Hakeem Anwar of Above Phone. As you are inspired to tune into the second half, which I highly recommend because it's where we get a little weirder, a little more out there. You can find that over on both my Locals and my Patreon communities. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. At both of my communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content that you're not gonna find anywhere else. One last reminder to click that subscribe button, like, share, comment, review, sign up for the newsletter. I do have a super secret product line, and the only way to find out about new product drops is through my newsletter. So do sign up there ASAP. And Last reminder to nab your own Above Phone products. Use abovephone.com/Danny and you will get $25 off anything you purchase, plus all the wonderful bells and whistles and human support that come along with being an Above Phone customer. All right, that does it. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are Omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon for part 2 of my conversation with Hakeem Anwar. Have a rockin' day.